You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Car Stories. This episode is a very special episode because this is the origin story of how Amelia and I know each other.
Yeah, and this episode was actually filmed before the understanding that I was going to co-host with you too.
I think Car Stories, I was feeling like I don't want to do this anymore. I started losing that Northern Star, that purpose, and then... You know, when they say things happen for a reason or people come into your life for a particular reason, that was one of those moments where it all kind of made sense, you know?
Yeah, I always say that and I believe it wholeheartedly that everything happens for a reason. And yeah, it was a great conversation. Felt like I had known you my entire life, but people will understand where our kind of foundation came from after they listened to this episode.
Yeah. Everything happens for a reason.
That it does.
Definitely this episode did. So hopefully you guys enjoy. I'm sitting here today with Amelia Hartford. We had a kind of a coffee sit down like a few months ago, got to know each other. And I was super impressed by her story, her ethos, you know, her journey in life. She's a fellow actor and she is a car lover or car aficionado, and she's a true rarity in this world because she's a young woman that actually wrenches on her own cars. It's not just lip service and saying that I like cars, or you know, and I like Ferraris and like to stand and take pictures of it. She actually wrenches, and
well, thank you.
And it's awesome that she also has a Grand National, which I have, and she loves that.
To be fair, it's a limited. It's not a real one, but I am such a fan of G-bodies.
G-body, yeah. Same. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to share, Amelia. You know, we actually have a connective tissue. And it's up to you if you want to share this, because that was a really compelling story. And I feel like, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty open book, so I feel like I really have like no reason not to share. I should preface, I lost my dad at a very young age due to suicide. So mental health has been so important to me. And growing up, I watched my dad live, breathe, bleed by trying to become a movie producer. And he was able to do two movies that unfortunately didn't make a return, whatever, but he tried. And I just watched him every night come home, work on the script every night, try to make something out of it. And I think that's where I grew up to see a lot of my drive. But in one of the films that he did, he had cast you in, and it was called Forbidden Warrior. And I had actually met you when I was a little child and didn't put that together until much later in life. And that was pretty wild. And this is before the Fast franchise and everything. This was, what year? This was in like 2006, 7?
2005.
2005?
2005.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. So but since then, what's your journey been?
I lost my dad probably 3 years after that had happened. I had this rude awakening that I was going to be alone in my life. I didn't have a dad to tell me, like, this is what you should do with your money for financing. This is how you should save for retirement, you know? And one of the first decisions I had to make in my life was the first car I was going to buy myself. And I couldn't go to my mom. I didn't have anyone in my life to go to. So I resorted to the internet. And at the time, I didn't realize the race car forums would be biased towards race cars. I thought that was just, oh, die hard car enthusiasts. And these forums had told me that I should get something that's rear-wheel drive and manual and something bigger than a four-cylinder. So I listened to the internet, which I'm thankful I did. My first car was an Infiniti G35, and I had never driven stick a day in my life. I picked up this car, roasted the clutch on the way home, but fell in love with wanting to perfect how to drive stick. And that was just something that I was able to divert my attention from having just recently lost my dad to then having the sense of freedom and being able to go on drives and really wanting to rev shift down match and park on a hill and see if I can pull forward without it rolling back. And it was something that occupied my time and my mental. And then it was shortly after that that I moved to Indiana, where I met the Bloomington car crew, known as B Crew. And these guys took me under their wing. They were big brothers to me in a time where I really needed that. And instead of, I was going through a really dark time, and instead of partying on the weekends, I had this community where we would work on cars, one specifically a DSM in Eagle Town that was just constantly breaking down. So there was always an excuse to get together and we'll work on cars. I am so grateful of that time in the community, because when I lost my family, I felt like I had this newfound family, and wherever I went, I could find that car family. Mm. So that was a huge pivotal time in my life to feel like I'd always be safe somewhere. But it wasn't too long after that where I couldn't turn on the television without feeling guilty. I would get mad at myself for not pursuing film and television, not pursuing being an actress, because that's something that meant the world to me. And it's all I've ever wanted to do. The earliest thought in my head was, I want to be an actress when I grow up. I love creating. I love living in the moment. I just love everything about it. And at the time, I'd since lost the G35. I was doing SCCA races with it. One day on the way from the track, someone had hit me at a stop, totaled the car. The guys helped me kind of put together this 240SX, LS swapped. I love the car. So Nissan was a big part of that, as well as Chevy small blocks. But I packed this little Nissan of mine with everything I owned in it, drove cross country, got a little apartment in Hollywood, and have just been pursuing the Hollywood dream for 10 years now.
Wow.
I worked as a waitress, living paycheck to paycheck for 6 years of that. Was on unemployment, food stamps, just trying everything and anything I could to catch a break. It wasn't until 9 years after being here that I got my first role in something. But that's where the car community came back into my life again, was when I moved back, I was able to look on the forums, find where the local car meets were. It was nice that I always knew I could go somewhere and find that community. And then probably about 6 years into it is when I started YouTubing. I had a lot of pressure from peers, from my mom actually too. And it was so funny for my mom to tell me to start YouTubing, because I'm like, what do you know, mom? YouTube, please. but she was right. And I started my first video, just walking around my 240. I had been daily driving it to auditions with no air conditioning, constantly breaking down. And I just walked around the car and said, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to rebuild this car and learn how to drift in 1 month and follow along. And I've been doing 3 videos a week ever since. It was only this past year that I started tapering down to 1 a week so I could really devote more time into acting. But that's the long-winded answer of what I've kind of been doing the past 15 or so years now.
Wow. And you have a pretty big movie coming out pretty soon. Can we say?
Yeah. No, we can say. I'm so blessed and thankful to have the opportunity to be in the new Gran Turismo adaption.
It's awesome.
It was at such peace on this project because I'm like, I'm literally living a dream that I've only imagined of getting to blend the world of both cars and film. That was really cool.
Wow.
It was also really nice too, being on a set where everyone was just so kind. Because you hear all these stories, but thankfully I couldn't have been more blessed with just how awesome everyone was. The opportunity was great. And I got to live in Hungary for a couple months.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Your father would be so proud of you. And, you know, my memories of your father, I remember you asked me, you're like, hey, I don't know if you have, you know, good experiences with my pops. You know, hopefully it doesn't affect this coffee that we're having. But no, he was such a great supporter. And it was like one of, you know, my earlier films, and it was like a pretty big role for me. And, you know, memories of him were always, everything's positive, you know, because he had such great energy when he came to set. You could tell that he was so enthusiastic and passionate about what he was doing, you know. So I don't have one single like negative memory. Unfortunately, you know, just it's the nature of this business. Some movies work and some don't, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, we were limited by money and all that, you know. But I every memory of that film is positive, you know.
It's so trippy to me that I used to know my dad, that you guys got to work together. It's just, I didn't really have anyone aside from my mom who really knew him. So it was so trippy to hear you just even talking about him. And it's nice the memories are good, because obviously I've talked about it. He had a drug addiction, alcoholism, and towards the end, things did get pretty ugly. But it's really nice to hear that at least at work, doing what he loved and all he had been trying to do was, it sounds like he was genuinely very happy.
Yeah. And I can relate with that. Issues with fathers, you know, because I grew up with a stepfather and I never knew my biological father. And the only thing that I ever heard of him was negative things.
Yeah.
Like in my whole life, you know, my relatives on my mother's side would say, you know, just don't turn out to be like your father. And
yeah,
I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
I've never met this dude, you know, and I actually met him.
Did you?
Yeah, I met him.
What was that like? And how long ago?
I met him right after college, so it was like 96. You know, I had so many like issues with my stepfather growing up, you know, and with my mother. You know, I don't think they were ready to be parents, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like I needed to know who my biological father, you know, was. And I, you know, kept asking them. I was like, how do I find this guy? And my stepfather actually had his Korean social security number, and he was able to track him down.
Really?
Yeah. And then my mother contacted his sister, who was living in Washington, D.C., and somehow they got a hold of him, and then he flew out to L.A. to meet me.
Was this after your success?
No. I had 10 jobs and living in some, like, cockroach-infested apartment, and, you know, I had a million jobs just to survive. And in my mind, I had this idea of what my father was going to be like. You know, I thought he was going to be like Mr. Rogers, like show up in a cardigan, and he was going to, you know, say all these like wonderful things to me. And, you know, we're going to go throw the baseball together, and they're going to live happily ever after.
Well, you're going to have to create some narrative, right? Having no idea what to go into it.
Yeah, especially having such a, you know, tough relationship with my stepfather. You know, I mean, he was really tough on me. First of all, I never felt like I was his son, and I never felt loved, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had this imaginary idea of what the perfect father would be. And he showed up at the airport. I picked him up at LAX, and it was like out of a bad Yakuza movie. He showed up in like a red blazer.
Okay.
With like gold glasses, sunglasses, and he had this like woman next to him, and he's saying, he pulled out this like Virginia Slim cigarette. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, it's like a woman's cigarette, and he lit it up inside the airport, and he looked like straight out of like a Japanese Yakuza movie, right? Like straight out
of
that.
That's kind of gangster.
Yeah, totally gangster. Right? This gold watch, right? Yeah. And then I couldn't see his eyes because it's like he was wearing gold, like Porsche Carrera sunglasses, right? And I'm like, no, that's not him. But as soon as I saw him, I was like, I think that's my dad. Because my mother and all my relatives, my aunts would talk about how, you know, he was like, you know, kind of like he was a thug. You know, he was like straight out, like he went to jail. Like he literally went to jail for like a prostitution ring. And, you know, like he beat my mother. You know, he was like that dude. Like he got my mother knocked up purely just to get like money out of her family. Hmm. Right. So I heard all these stories growing up, and then I see him and I'm like, I hope that's not my biological father. And he sees me and he walks up to me and he's like, hey, Sung Ho, which is my full Korean name, Sung Ho, right? So Koreans have like two names, like it's Sung Ho or Sung Hee.
I was actually going to ask you about why you shortened yours.
So I can answer that. It was because basically I had to shorten it because nobody in Georgia could pronounce it, right?
Oh.
So yeah, Sung was just easier. And so then I take him to the hotel, and this woman that was next to him was his translator because he thought that I didn't speak Korean and he barely spoke. Well, he didn't speak any English at all. But I spoke enough Korean at that time to be able to talk to him, you know, and just basic conversation. And then we go to lunch and this is comedy. He takes off his sunglasses and I can't stop staring at his eyebrows. And he goes, I know you're staring at my eyebrows. And I'm like, yeah, they look like green onions. Like, what is wrong with your eyebrows? Are they tattooed? And he goes, yeah, that woman that came with me kept saying that I don't have a lot of eyebrow. And she said that, you know, Asian women are tattooing their eyebrows. And if I do it, it'll make me look better. And the dude fucked it all up. I was about to lose it. I'm like, this dude is like gangster, but he has these like green onion eyebrows, right? and then he puts his sunglasses back on. And he's such a ladies' man. The Korean waitress came over and he's like, you know, he's flirting with her and she's all smitten. And I'm like, oh, I could see why my mother, you know, like, you know, fell for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts to do this like half-ass Oscar performance about how he's been looking for me my whole life and takes off his glasses and he's trying, you know, I'm an actor, right? So he's trying to cry, right? And I'm like, if we had a camera on him, it would have been a comedy, right? And I'm like, what is he doing? He's like, he's trying to cry. And he's trying to convince me that, you know, he's like a great dad. And like, you know, I'm like, what's the catch? And my mother kept saying, it's like, hey, watch out. Because there's going to be something behind everything he does.
Did he want something?
Oh, yeah, totally. And then he starts to ask questions about my mother. He's like, hey, I heard that your mom, you know, she has some like real estate and she's like doing all right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. What's it to you? And he's like, you know, I have a sister who lives in Virginia. And, you know, I was wondering if, you know, father and son, like, you know, we could do something together. And I'm like, do what? And he goes, you know, maybe you should forget about this acting thing. You know, I don't know if that's going to work, right? And he's like, you should go to Korea. I could take you to Korea. You can. I go, but I barely speak Korean. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And he goes, well, we should do some business together. And I'm like, what kind of business? And he's like, you know, I have a friend that has a strip club. And, you know, I think if we open some strip clubs together, you know, we could do well. Like, you could, you know, translate. You could, you know, take care of the English part. And I'm looking at him going, the fuck is this guy talking about? Strip club, right? So he had me take him to every strip club in LA.
Really?
Yeah, to go do research. And then during the process, I was like, what the fuck is this guy doing? He just met me and he's like dragging me to all these strip clubs.
That's right? Gotta be so hard to like have this, not expectation, but this perceived reality of what you're going to go into and then just be completely shocked by strip clubs.
Yeah. I mean, when I tell the story, it's very entertaining because you can't make this kind of stuff up, right? And he looked like...
No, this sounds like it'd make a great film.
Yeah. And he was at home because he looked like a Yakuza gangster. Like, you know, the way he sat and he like smoking in there, the way he kind of addressed the girls and stuff.
It paints a picture that I can vividly see.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, and he has this like woman that's doing all his bidding, like translator stuff and like assistant. And I'm like, this is just odd. And then he drops it on me. He's like, First of all, he gives me this gold card, this credit card, this Visa card, mm-hmm. right? Which later I tried to use it and it was declined. There was no money behind it. He's like, you know, here's a gold card for you to use for all these years. I've never been there. And it's like declined. I try to get something at Big Five, like a baseball or something, and it like declined. But he asked for $600,000+.
Whoa.
Right. He's like, could you ask your mom if she could loan us $600,000 so I could open this strip club in Virginia?
God.
Right. And I'm like, she's had to work her whole life, right? Like as like a housekeeper and a cleaner. She's not going to give neither of us or anybody in this world $600,000 to open a strip club. Are you out of your mind, right? And after that, you know, I kind of said, I don't think I need to be around this dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, after some of the Fast and Furious movies, I got a call from...
I was going to say, did he reach out?
Yeah, when he was dying. He was dying. Oh. He had some type of fatal cancer, and they asked, you know, I had a cousin on his side that reached out to me and said, you know, he wanted to see me. And I was like, see me? And I was in Georgia. I remember I was in Georgia, Atlanta shooting. Yeah, we were wrapping up Fast and Furious 5.
Okay.
And I remember where I was at the, I was having like drinks and a sandwich, burgers across the street from the hotel with Paul Walker and, mm-hmm. you know, and a couple of guys that were working on the movie. And I get this call and I was like, I stepped outside and I was like, I came back in all frazzled. And I remember I asked Paul, I was like, what do you think I should do? And this is where, you know, Paul is like so sweet. He's like, you should go see him. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I feel like there's something up. And then I called my mom and she's like, don't go because they're going to probably give you the bill.
Mm.
Right, for because I'm sure he doesn't have insurance, right? And it was one of those weird things, you know. It's like it sucks because, you know, I wish we had like a relationship, but he turned out to be like, you know, like the worst.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I mean, you say that your cars are your kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many cars do you have now?
Oh my goodness. I think I'm at 11.
11?
Right now. Maybe 12.
Wow.
Yeah. And finding parking for them is just half the fun.
Yeah. Where do you park all these cars? Like, all over the place?
Yeah. At my shop. And then I keep a couple at the house too. So I'm constantly just moving cars around and shuffling and figuring that out.
Mm-hmm. I met you downstairs. And let's talk about that child that you drove over here, your daily driver. That was like, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, my twin turbo C8 Z06. I think it might still be the only twin turbo Z06. I haven't been on the internet forums lately to see if anyone else has twin turboed theirs. But yeah, I love the car. I really enjoy it.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, if people want to see it, I upload the videos on YouTube. I do stupid things with fun cars.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive that you wrench. Like the other day, I was texting you, and you were like, "Oh yeah, yeah. I'm changing brakes on my, you know, Grand National or your Buick, right?"
Yeah, so. I still call it a GNX, even though it's technically a fake GNX. But yeah, when we were texting, I was like, my hands are covered in grease because I'm packing the bearings, and I'm like, trying to respond. But I just enjoy it. There's something so therapeutic about working on a car.
Yeah,
it's nice to be able to take something apart and then put it back together better than what it was when you started. And it, of course, it has to go right. Otherwise, you're just banging your head on a wall or trying to, you know, need it and go take a walk because you can't figure out why, you know, X isn't working. But
do you feel pressure to have to like record everything you're doing around your cars?
You know, it's funny you ask that. Yeah, I mean, I feel guilty in a way. Even if I'm driving my cars, I don't at least bring my camera. Or like if I go on car rallies or even just Sunday drives, I need to be able to record it or capture it. So sometimes it pulls me out of being in the moment because I'm constantly thinking, oh, I should have shot that. Oh, that would have been a cool shot. Oh, wait, this would have been a great thing for this.
Mm.
But yeah, I do. That thought does definitely cross my mind constantly. Because at the end of the day, you know, you're telling a story in these 20-minute episodes of this is what we're doing today. This is how I'm going to do it. This is it finished. And this is how it performs.
You know, social media, I have this like weird relationship with it these days. Like I'm actually really afraid of it because it gets me like super bummed out, you know?
Why so?
I end up like comparing myself to like other people and going, hey, I don't have this many followers. I don't have this many likes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's not like I don't have any, but then I go, well, what am I even thinking about? And then it starts to like trigger all of my insecurities. So
I do feel like a big reason for people struggling with so much mental health in today's world is because of social media. You're constantly comparing yourself to other people. You're constantly seeing things you don't have. A big reason of why I started YouTubing was, well, one, of course, I wanted just to make a good living for myself. I didn't do it for the money, but I was like, if I can do anything else and just get by instead of being a waitress, then I'd be happy. But also because other servers in the restaurant, because the joke, it's like, oh, you're an actor. What restaurant do you work at?
Mm-hmm.
I would see other servers and friends of mine lose roles and opportunities to people who had a following on social media. So that was a big factor in me being like, well, if I could make a living to still be able to do auditions, do something I actually enjoy doing, working on cars, and not have to waitress, and I can build a social media presence at the same time, that just made the most sense for me. And I'm really glad I did that because it would have been very easy for me not to have. And I don't know where I would have been today if not.
So for someone that is trying to start a YouTube channel or build content, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because you put stuff out there doesn't mean that it's going to be successful. I mean, you are successful and you have a following, like a legitimate following. I mean, you have like a million subscribers or something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
Right? So like, I mean, what do you think? Why is it you think people gravitate towards you, you know, and your content? Like, what is the ethos or the theme that you try to put into your content?
I'm going to answer that in two parts.
Okay.
So one thing Mr. Beast talks about, who I highly respect everything that he's done in the world of YouTube and other platforms. He talks about if you're going to start YouTube, do 100 videos just to post. And then from there, start tailoring back, looking at which ones did the best. And then from there, try to figure out what did the best, why it did the best, and then start dissecting and then putting a plan and moving forward. And a lot of just doing the 100 videos too is more the commitment of actually not only filming, but editing. There's a joke that everyone wants to be a YouTuber until it comes to time to edit. But for me, I was very fortunate that the first video got an audience. The first video today that I ever produced has about 500,000 views because it got shared online, because I was first to market in the field that I was doing, specifically LS content in the female space in the male-dominated industry, specifically with my 240 and then trying to rebuild that. And from there, I would do simple things like I couldn't afford, like I was living paycheck to paycheck. I couldn't afford things. My friend would let me install coilovers on his car that he bought for the video, and I would be working on friends' cars. I had one shop in the very beginning allow me to have a small part in the garage in exchange for promotion and just helping them with marketing around the shop. And I was able to work on my car and get some used parts to be able to do builds. But I think from the very beginning, which it's pretty crazy to watch my first episode, just to see my mannerisms, how shy I was, how soft-spoken I was, to where I am today. I think what I've seen continued success from is, one, doing stuff that I'm passionate about. I could not continue to do the YouTube grind for so long without just 1,000% loving what I'm doing. So picking the builds that excite me. But also, I like kind of pushing the boundaries of things, and especially the boundaries of horsepower and finding what the limits of cars are. So I saw a lot of success with the C8 Stingray platform from, you know, at one point being the world's fastest, disclosure, I'm not today, and then also building one of the highest horsepower cars and all this being done in my small garage. I was basically living in the shop during that period of time because I was just so happy and so excited with everything I was doing. And fortunately, I had a team behind me that, as the company scaled, I've been able to hire my friends and individuals that are just as passionate. So I think for me, what's worked is doing things that I just, you know, that keep me up at night because I'm thinking about it, because I'm just so excited about it.
Mm. Did you have any pushback from like men out there going, you know, what is this girl like, you know, trying to do with cars and stuff?
Oh, definitely. Even still to this day, I've always struggled with men and sometimes even women challenging me, like, oh, it can't be real. She's not doing it. She's reading a script, blah, blah, blah. But I just try not to focus on that. I really just focus on what I'm doing and the people I surround myself with.
Mm.
Like, I don't think I'd be doing it today if I didn't really love it, you know?
Yeah.
But even in the beginning, my first couple YouTube videos, if you go back and look at the comments, I think it was like really the third and the fourth, I had some like seriously terrible comments that made me contemplate even continuing YouTube. But
really?
I can only hope that it helped to pave the way for other women. You know, I'm not saying that I was the trailblazer in that, but I can only hope that what I did helped to inspire anyone out there to create content and put themselves out there.
What is the parallels of like you working on a car, because it's a meticulous, you know, passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a level of OCD, right? Are there any like lessons you've learned building cars that you apply to your work as an actor?
Aside from the give it 110% at all times, I think something that was actually probably more challenging for me to grasp for acting was trying to figure out a process, because with cars, it's very linear. You know, you have to, if you're swapping something, remove X part, replace it with Y part, then you have Z. Where it's acting, it's not so linear like that. It's a little more modular of sometimes just, you know, having the space to think and build out the character's past. And just because you spend 30 minutes doing this doesn't mean you're going to get 30 minutes of work out of it. Sometimes you could spend, for acting, hours try to build out a character and get nowhere, where some days you get really far with it.
Mm.
I have to remind myself to be patient with the process, because it is a process. With cars, it's, you know, if it doesn't work, I hit it with a hammer and
and
sometimes I can get the same result.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do you mind me asking what your process is as an actor?
One thing that I'd love to do is to create a backstory and history. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why I love old cars, is that I'll look at an old car and I'll fabricate like a history of like, you know, what kind of memories happened within that car. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you attack a character, you have to create like a Bible of the character's DNA. If you play like a character in Star Wars and none of it's on screen, like your backstory, you still have to create it. Like, yeah. Where was he born? What does he eat? Like, what was his...
Do you write all that down or do you keep it in your thoughts?
I do. Yeah. I create like a Bible and, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a journal. And I don't know if you read that book, Artist's Way, you know, like every actor.
I think that's part of the curriculum at this point. Yeah.
It's a good, for artists or anybody, it's a good book to read. And then, you know, you put your thoughts in it. But then I walk around and I talk to myself, you know, and I figure out like how this guy walks, like, you know, was he bullied? Was he the bully? Like, you know, what's his favorite food if he does eat or not, mm-hmm. you know?
Do you memorize things very easily?
In terms of like lines
and stuff like that? Or do you don't memorize them? Because you don't want to get them stuck in your head a certain way.
Depends on the kind of lines. If it's exposition, it's very difficult for me. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I played an attorney and it's like, you know, like legal jargon, it's like super difficult. But mm-hmm. lines that have an emotional root to it, are very easy for me.
Yeah, I feel like once you have that clear intention and objective, and then if you can relate to the character, you found that grounding, that's when it becomes easier to memorize. I think that was something I started doing the very, very beginning of, I had to memorize everything before I worked on the character. And now I'm like, no, I was doing that backwards. I got to build out the history. Like memorization's almost the very last thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and also, you know, if when you start working with, you know, seasoned actors, you know, like you think like there's going to be this linear process, right? When you come to set, mm-hmm. right? Like everyone's going to have their lines like memorized and the director's going to know exactly what shot's going to be, you know, going on and how they're going to approach, you know, which lenses they're going to use. But my favorite process is when you show up and, you know, they have a general, there's a lot of preparation. There's been pre-production, but they let the artists and the actors and everybody collaborate and go, let's feel like what's going on. Let's hear the words. And instead of telling you, you're going to stand there. This is your mark. It's like, where would the character make his entrance and where would he sit and how would you feel? And when you get to work with, you know, really seasoned actors that, you know, carry that merit, that influence, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know? It's like you have the general sheet music and then you come together mm-hmm. and you play and you create.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
That was something that was so cool about Gran Turismo with the director that I had the opportunity to work with, Neil Blomkamp. He was very improv friendly, and that was something that I wasn't used to. But I actually, at first I was intimidated as an actor here, improv, but then I grew to love it because it really allowed us to be free and open and just work with the other actors. And it really opened my eyes to this different world of not being so heavy on the text.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment.
This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The hardest part for me in my career has been having to convince the creative or the, sometimes it's the director, sometimes it's the producers, right? The people that are in power, that I'm a three-dimensional human being. You know, you and I, we have a different entry point. You know, you're a pretty white girl that comes in, big eyes, blue eyes, right? You're very American, right? And I come in, even though I'm from Georgia and you know, I'm American as apple pie, they look at me and they're like, why are you here? You know, they need to explain that. They need to go, well,
if, you still feel like that today? Or was that more?
Okay. I mean, I think it's changing. You know, it's like, it's wonderful that these conversations are happening of inclusiveness. But, you know, I've been doing this 3 decades and, you know, the whole point of this podcast is to be transparent and have like real hard conversations You know, there's no opportunities for me as an actor. You know, that's why I'm going behind the camera, you know, because I feel like my face doesn't affect, you know, decision-making in Hollywood when you're a director. You know, I'm grateful for many of the roles and opportunities I've gotten, but, you know, I want to have the opportunity to dive into a role that merits an Oscar, you know?
Like, yeah.
But I feel like it's so far away, you know, Amelia. Like, you know, in success, like even with the Fast and Furious franchise, a lot of times I don't feel like it helps me because they're like, yeah, he's the Asian dude that, you know, he's a stunt driver. And I'm like, I'm not. Like, you know, I'm not a stunt driver. Like, I'm an actor. You know, I've done, you know, my career started with, you know, independent films that went to Sundance, you know.
Yeah.
But, and with directors, like I've had to, you know, answer certain questions. It's like, you know, they ask me like, you know, what martial arts do you know? And I go, well, why does that have anything to do with the decisions of where my character goes within this? And it's like, well, I don't know where to put you. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, because you're Asian. And I'm like, what? And then within, like I did a TV show and it's like, every time I showed up, if I had anything to say, it was, you know, like the character went to Chinatown. Right. And I'm like, And they used to really, really like eat me up. And, you know, like I used to get super down and like, you know, and then that would turn into like just, you know, like anger. And I realized anger doesn't serve because it shuts everybody down. And you got to, you know, understand the rules and then you got to win that game. And then you got to be in a position where you can make change. Right. And also we're in America too. You know, there's like 5% of Asian people in America. So, you know, there's a demographic that show business has to serve. So, you know, I understand that. But, you know, I envy when I hear things like, you know, that you've never had a bad experience because you're treated like a human being when you're invited to set. And a lot of times, especially when I started my career, like I'm not treated like an equal. You know?
Sure.
And even to this day, you know, it's like.
And just to communicate, it's specifically with directors on set. Obviously, I've had terrible experiences with terrible humans in my lifetime.
Sure, sure.
Especially being a woman in the male-dominated space. But obviously, I can't relate or even begin to put myself in your shoes for what you're telling me. I'm, you know, that's really heartbreaking to hear a lot of that. You say the franchise you fear could have hurt you doing Oscar-nominated films, but I believe that you could be cast in one tomorrow, sincerely. I don't know if your future entails you continuing to be in front of the camera, if you just want to fully be behind it, Or maybe there's a world where you're producing the stories you want to tell that you also star in. But I do see a world there for you.
Mm. Well, thank you. I mean, that's why I'm still in the game, right? Mm. I'm still on the field trying to hustle. And I am optimistic, but I also don't want to wait for the phone call to never happen.
Yeah.
And so, and then it's, as I get older, it's less about like me. And it's about like, what's my contribution to the world and even this business, and, you know, give other people opportunities, right? And it's mm-hmm. not like I'm on a soapbox going, okay, I'm only going to cast like Asian American people. It's not that. It's like, give everybody that is marginalized an opportunity, and like, have empathy when you come in. But then mm-hmm. also understand the business of show business, and there is an economy behind it. And the more successful a movie is, you know, the more opportunities you have to make change, right? Mm-hmm. And instead of complaining about it, it's like, what can I do to like, you know, contribute, right? And I love storytelling. I love collaboration. I love being on set. Like every moment I'm on set, like I'm so happy. And that's why it hurts, because, you know, as an actor or the roles that I, you know, get to be a part of, you're there temporarily. They're just a part of it, you know, like real quick, you're like an appetizer, and then you're never the main course, right? Mm-hmm. So I like to be the first one and the last one on set. And yeah. I like to talk to everybody. I like the whole process from pre-production to production to post-production. So I'm okay not being in front of the camera. It doesn't have to be about me. And any actor that says, like, I don't care about fame, it's like, when you start out, like, you know, it is part of the allure, you know, and I don't think I need that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, you know, I directed a feature during COVID, feature film, my first one. And it's just an amazing feeling to be part of the process of making a film, and then also seeing other people's dreams come true mm-hmm. and being a part of that.
Well, and also to create something from beginning to end, right?
Yeah. Just like a car.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like a car.
Yeah. Just like a car. And, you know, like a car, I've realized that you can't do everything by yourself. And there's always something that you can learn. And if you keep your mind open, you know, there's a wealth of community out there. Mm-hmm. And if you have this like empathy and respect for other people and this willingness to learn, it's amazing the community within the car culture.
You know?
And I think that's why I've always used the car culture as a well of community. Like, you know, it allowed me to go have direct access to individuals that, aside from Hollywood, like I would just be able to look up to as fathers, as friends, mm-hmm. you know, as masters of their craft. And the world doesn't know them. Like, you know, they don't have a TikTok or YouTube. They're just like dudes in a little garage somewhere. You know,
chain, like, smoking cigarettes, working on the car.
Eating tacos.
Yeah.
Right. But then you hang out with them and they're real life superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, they're the father that I always wanted, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, I think that's why I love the car community so much.
Yeah.
You know?
Same.
Yeah. Do you think the kids today are wrenching like they used to, or is it because, you know, all the old timers are saying, oh, they're not, kids don't even know how to drive manual anymore. But then you go to these car meets, or you go to, like, you know, like SEMA or Tokyo Auto Salon, it's like a lot of young folks out there.
I think because we live in the city, we're gonna see it a different way, where sure, more kids are taking Uber and there's a lot of quote unquote car pollution, so a lot of people don't want to drive as much. But if you go outside of the city, I feel like there's just as many kids who are just as passionate about wrenching on cars and wanting to customize it, to make it their own, to kind of, you know, tell their own unique story with it and personalize it. But I also don't think things like street takeovers are helping the forward progression of the automotive industry and things like that. But I do feel like there is still a large group of kids who are interested in cars. It just might not be what it was 20 years ago. It's a different way.
Hmm. I mean, is it growing? Is it dwindling?
I don't know if it's growing.
Mm.
I see a lot of racetracks starting to close because they can't keep the business. And, you know, I guess if you really look at it, how much wrenching does an EV car really need unless you're changing the brakes and whatnot? I don't know. Maybe I just am a pretty optimistic person, or I force myself to be. But I do believe that there are still a lot of kids growing up who are passionate about cars, who want a wrench. Is it as much today as it was back then? I don't know.
That's the catch-22 with these street takeovers, is that the dudes that are doing it are wrenching on their cars.
Mm-hmm.
What's the thing with these street takeovers? Like, why are these kids like into it? Like,
I don't know.
Maybe I'm just too old.
I've never been to one, so I couldn't tell you what the hype is. I just see these horrible videos online of kids doing donuts in intersections and some bystander getting hurt from being there.
But it seems like they like that, getting hurt. It's like a badge of honor, or like getting swiped. Like, you know those videos, like these kids are like being flipped upside down.
The only thing I'll never understand, you know? The only thing I try to think of is like, okay, so, you know, back in the 90s when people were drag racing, shutting down roads in the valley or something like that to go drag racing, and the cops would come and everyone would scatter and you're placing bets on who's going to win. Like, that was kind of frowned upon back then too, you know, but it didn't seem as reckless as what's happening today. So I don't know, is that just my age coming in and looking at the generation, like all these kids doing this when maybe we were doing the same things at a different point in our lives, but it was just different because it was drag racing versus donuts. I don't know. It's
with the drag racing, there's a point. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, who's fastest, who's biggest, who has the biggest, the fastest, most powerful, right? It's like, and then you bet, you're like, I win. Yeah. I beat you, man. Yeah. I get your pink slip or I make the money, right?
Well, this, it's all clout, right?
Is it?
I would think so. Who can do the craziest donut or smoke the most tire and then run from the police afterwards? I'm speaking like I know this.
Yeah.
I don't really. I've looked into trying to create a film, trying not to glorify it as much. It appears that it has more to do with social media following and doing crazy shit with your car.
But so what? Like, where does it, I mean, going fast is one thing. It's like, look how many clicks you got because you beat so-and-so, or you went 200 miles an hour. Like, that makes sense. But then the most smoke, then...
Or the most views on a video.
And then what?
Clout? I don't know. Clout's a hell of a drug.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because you got the most smoke on your
cool
car?
Cool kids points.
But how do you continue that? You go...
I don't know.
Like, I'm not condoning it, but I would like to understand the psychology behind it.
Yeah.
Like, why do people get off on this? Because they look like they're having a blast.
Yeah, right.
Right? And
least from the videos that I've seen online.
Yeah. Even the dudes that getting, like, swiped by the cars, they get up and they're, like, giving each other high fives.
Oh, that was so cool.
That was the best, like, broken leg.
I don't understand it.
Well, maybe we're just getting older. You too,
Amelia.
So where can people find you?
YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. If you just search my name, Amelia Hartford, it's spelled E-M-E-L-I-A. It'll try to autocorrect you. That's where you can find me.
All right. Well, I'm excited.
I know, me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, this was great.
Awesome.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.